And now I just want to take you one step further in conclusion for tonight's thoughts. Detachment, I hope, though the word is difficult, I hope the point has been made. When detachment is complete, it's called abandonment. That one gives oneself with abandon, without regard, with nothing held back. Complete self-offering into the embrace of God. One other aspect of this same attitude is often called in the literature, the spiritual literature, indifference. But again, it's a word that's awkward. And maybe we could think of a better word. I've tried to, so I can't think of a better word. So I'll stay with it, but try to define it. Indifference in English can mean that you don't care either way. That's not what we'll be saying now. Because that's putting the focus in the wrong place here. Indifference means that whatever we value, and we value it, whatever matters to us, and things matter to us, people matter to us, however attached we are, and we're meant to be attached, it's meant to be real love, anything less than God is held in such a way that we're equally poised between yes and no, waiting on God's will, waiting on God's expression of desire. So our heart might be really attached to one side of it, but we've brought ourselves to a place where we're ready to do God's will and where we're equally ready whichever. We're indifferent in that sense. I actually think it's not the word that captures it in English, but it does apparently in the Romance languages. But I hope I can convey what it means. It's one of the things all the spiritual writers talk about, the discernment of spirits. If we want to know what God's will is, we're advised to try to come to this point. Because usually we trick ourselves. Usually I want A rather than B. And so, well, I'm always noticing other people do it, so I guess I'm doing it myself. You keep seeing people who go into discernment, and it's amazing how they always come out discerning what they want. It's a bit tricky. You kind of think, oh, I wonder what's going on here. Who's kidding who or what's going on? But it's frequent. Well, I reckon I see it anyhow happening. So you've got to look and think, is that what I'm doing? Is that what we're doing? Working things to what we really actually want. But real discernment is the hard part. In fact, the only hard part in discernment is coming to a point of this indifference. Equally ready to give or to hold, to leave or to stay, to go to left or go to right, to whatever. Equally ready. Because what really matters, whichever way our feelings might go, what we really want is God's will. Really want it. And if God declares his will with all our mind and heart and soul and strength, even if it hurts, even if it's terrible, even if it's a cross, or whatever it is, we embrace it. Because it's God's will and we trust God's love. So coming to that point is sometimes easy, and it depends on our temperament and the situation. Sometimes it's incredibly hard, as I'm sure you all know. But that's the key, and that's the virtue I'm looking at now. It's another way of talking about detachment, but very refined way. So, by the way, one of the best writings I've read on this, or the best thought I've had on it, was from Simone Weil, a French-Jewish philosopher, who was very, very influenced spiritually by a Dominican priest and was, in a sense, Christian. Not just in a sense, she would claim to be Christian in her thought, though she never actually joined any Christian community in any external way. And in her book called Gravity and Grace, which I read 40 and more years ago, so I can't remember it now, but I remember this part of it, she says, doing the will of God is easy. And then she describes the difficult part, which is what I've talked about, And once we've come to that point, then she gives lovely advice. She says, follow your own heart once you've come to indifference. That's the hard bit. Once you're there, just follow your heart. Because if you ask God for bread, he will never give you a stone. If you really want God's will, that's what your heart wants. And the advantage of following your heart is otherwise you're likely to follow what someone else says or what some authority figure says or what someone else thinks you ought to do. And then you've got the superego and you've got all kinds of... No, your heart is, if it's pure, and to the extent that it's pure, is your most trustworthy guide. Follow it. That really gives dignity to God's talking with you. And I don't mean this in any, I don't mean that either, in any self-centered way. One goes to all the trouble one can, asking advice, spiritual direction, coming to that point of indifference, and then follow your heart, because your heart will tell you. Let's look a little more deeply at what this might mean. We'll start by looking at Paul's letter to the Philippians, chapter 4, where Paul says, beloved, writing to a community he was very fond of, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Like Tyard, he's open to everything. But then he goes on. I have learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little. I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I've learned the secret of being well fed or hungry, having plenty or being in need. I can do all things in him who strengthens me. So a simple, loving man, being honest with the community, there's no pride in that, it's just the fact of it. He has come to a point where his strength comes from Jesus and he's capable. It doesn't matter to him if he's rich or poor, or all these things are indifferent. Indifferent to them. You might find this helpful. I do. It's the last words of the first book of John of the Cross's Ascent of Mount Carmel. And as a conclusion to this journey of asceticism, detachment, he writes, in self-dispossession, letting go of the ego might be how we'd put it, the heart is at rest. It wants nothing because it is grounded on Jesus, not on itself. It doesn't matter whether it feels elated or dejected. And you might add, it doesn't matter whether it's easy or hard. These are irrelevancies. It's what the heart really wants, discovering God's will, not being self-centered, and doing God's will with all our heart. That's where peace lies. And if it's hard, we still do it. If it's easy, we still do it. Here's another 16th century Italian saint, Robert Bellarmine, in his Ascent of the Monk to God, the monastery, woman or man. He writes, you might find this good advice too, consider that to be for your real good, which brings you to your goal. Consider that to be really bad, which cuts you off from your goal. Prosperity and adversity, riches and poverty, health and sickness, honour and ignominy, life and death, should not be sought after for themselves by the wise person, nor are they to be avoided for themselves. they contribute to the glory of God and your eternal happiness, they are good and to be sought. If they're obstacles to this, they are evil and to be avoided. And finally, I'd like to read for you carefully and perhaps comment on a quite wonderful statement by, well, many would say the leading theologian of this century just coming to an end. It's a big thing to say, but I reckon it'd be very hard to get a better theologian than this man. In fact, even whoever produces the Weekend Australian, they're producing regularly now, you know, the 100 best scholars or whatever, the artists, and they go through the list of them at the moment. Of the theologians, the one they selected to talk about was Rana. So, heavens, even someone in the Australian is doing a bit of reading. So, this is, he's German, another Jesuit, but he's written here on multi-volumes in an article called Ignatian Mysticism of Joy in the World. So it's about joy, and it's about Ignatius of Loyola, and he's a Jesuit, so he'd know what he's talking about. And it's trying to get the key insight, which is indifference. This is all about indifference. He'll use the Spanish word to keep it in its original meaning. But it's what we're talking about here. This extraordinarily subtle but very simple quality of being ready for whatever God wants without attachment to either alternative apart from love, attachment to God. So he's got this long statement, and I'll just go through it with you. Ignatius, he's talking about Ignatius of Loyola, Ignatius approached the world from God, not the other way about. Because he has delivered himself in the lowliness of an adoring self-surrender to the God beyond the whole world and to God's will, for this reason, and for this reason alone, says Karl Rahner, he is prepared to obey God's word, even when, out of the silent desert of his daring flight into God, he is, as it were, sent back into the world, which he'd found the courage to abandon in the folly of the cross. I'll just pause for a minute. There's a long, long, long history, which I'm sure you're aware of in Christianity, of people feeling the need to leave the world to be in contact with God, up onto a mountain, into a monastic. Thousands and thousands of men and women have done this over the centuries, into the desert. It basically happened at the end of the period of persecution, when in the first three centuries of the church's life, Christians were persecuted. They were not a part of the Roman world, and they were a minority group that suffered from all sides, and I know you know the story of that, the martyrs and so on. They were part of the world, but the world meaning commerce, life, society. But there were many things they didn't do because they were pagan, just as there are many things in our world we shouldn't be doing because they're pagan, including being caught up in an economic system which is atrociously ugly and shockingly sinful. I read not long ago in The Guardian, might have mentioned it last week, I hope I'm not saying it too often, the United Nations report it is, the three richest families in the world, families, not countries, the three richest families in the world have more economic wealth than 100 million of the poor people. Three families, 100 million. And if that isn't a system that's demonic, what on earth is? So that's the world we're into. They were in a pretty crook world too, where Roman power dominated. But then with the conversion of Constantine, a wonderful opportunity for the community, the church became official, and many people found it easy to join the church now because they wanted to, for good reasons. But now there was no real danger in it. And so a lot of people came in, and gradually the world became Christian. But at the beginnings of that period, some people felt that martyrdom was no longer possible and the heroism involved in that. But they sensed there was a heroic element at the centre of Christian life. And when it became no longer, as it were, heroic, they went out into the desert in an ascetical life, sometimes mad, sometimes heroically beautiful. So there's been a long history of flight from the world, leaving the world to find God. It's not only in Christianity, it's in a lot of religions. But Ignatius, at the time of the discovery of the New World and with a religious order that was going to be very active in the world, he brought all this together, and he too longed, as you might long, to escape in a way, if shouldn't use that word, but to go to God in the silence of the desert and retreat, and he did so at Manresa. But God asked him to go back into the heart of the mess, go back into the middle of all this, and love there where Jesus loved, incarnate in a real world. Well, that's what he's talking about here. And he's saying, beginning of this statement, that it's because the God that he discovered in the desert, and you can find that in your own heart, called him back. He was willing to come back, wanted to come back. Now, Karl Rahner continues, from this willingness to go back, results the double characteristic which is proper to Ignatian joy in the world. The two things are the maxims of what's called indifference, that's what we're talking about now. And the second one is finding God in all things. The first is the presupposition of the second. So let's look at what indifference is. He uses the Spanish there, indiferencia. It is the calm readiness for every command of God. The equanimity, equal soul, equanimity, which out of the realization that God is always greater than anything we can experience of God, or anything wherein we can find God, continually detaches itself from every determinate thing which human beings are tempted to regard as the point in which alone God meets them. You may have met God in a certain place 3 years ago, and it was really lovely. The temptation is to want to get that again, to go back 3 years. You can't. It's okay, there's nothing wrong with wanting that, but is it God you want, or is it the experience you had 3 years ago? Is it the prayer you had when you were younger that attracts you? Do you want that prayer experience, or do you want God? They're not the same. So here we are now, even in the most sacred places where even our Isaacs have to be let go. Mums and dads have to let their children go. We all have to let go. We eventually have to let our life go. So where we've met God even has to be let go. Come, follow me, says Jesus. Rana continues, all possession of God must leave God as greater beyond all possession of him. Out of such an attitude of indifference, there springs of itself the perpetual readiness to hear a new call from God to tasks other than those previously engaged in. Continually to decamp from those fields where one wanted to find God and to serve Him. There springs the will to be at hand like a servant always ready for new assignments. The courage to accept the duty of changing oneself, of having nowhere a permanent resting place, as in a restless wandering toward the restful God. The courage to regard no way to God as being the way, but rather to seek God on all ways. Brackets again, of course, we do this according to our state of life. If you're a single person, then it's more likely that God will call you in a way that He wouldn't call a married person with children. Or if you're a married person with children, God will call you on a way that He wouldn't call a single person. Or if you're male, female, whatever age, health, all these factors come in, of course they do, because God loves us exactly where and as we are. But we're talking about an attitude which any of us can have, whatever our commitments of love and wherever, whatever state of mind we're in, because we're all called to the perfection of love, to tend to the perfection of love. So here is Ignatius has got this attitude of being ready for anything that God might want, and then do it. Rana continues, moved by such a spirit, even the passionate love of the cross, if you have such a love, even the passionate love of the cross and of sharing the ignominy of the death of Christ is still ruled by indifference. The cross, yes, if it should please His Divine Majesty to call to such a death in life. So we're not even allowed to be attached to the cross. Only embrace the cross if Jesus gives it to you. If you give it to yourself, that's very unwise. So everything depends on God's will. Nothing is good in itself. It becomes good when God calls us to it. Nothing is better than anything else. The best thing to do is the will of God for you. Indifference is possible only where the will to a flight from the world is alive. So we have to be ready to fly beyond the world. We want to God, to hold the mystery of the transcendent. Where that's alive, we can be safe in the world. Otherwise, we can be blocked and attached in it. So the two have to go together, says our author. And yet, he says, this indifference, in its turn, disguises that love for the foolishness of the cross. Real Jesuit statement here, and very, very wise. This indifference, in its turn, disguises that love for the foolishness of the cross into a daily moderation of a normal style of life marked by good sense. Very long tradition behind that. Common sense, ordinary, using your reason, thinking through things, being normal, all these very, very healthy virtues. Eccentric spirituality might be all right. It nearly always isn't. But it might happen to be. You wouldn't want to say it was never right, because we're all different, and the more neurotic we are doesn't mean God can't call us to sanctity. So that's okay. We can all... But common sense, moderation, normality are all very healthy signs, says Rana. And that was very Jesuit, very Ignatian. In brief, such indifference becomes a seeking of God in all things. Because God is greater than everything, God can be found if one flees away from the world. But God can come to meet you on the streets, in the midst of the world. So where is God calling you now? Where is God calling you tonight, tomorrow? If we listen, he might call you away into retreat. He might call you to be roll up your sleeves and be right at the center of everything. And it's his call that matters. Jesus might go up onto the mountain 40 days and 40 nights fasting, or he might be thrust into the middle of a Jerusalem city, reaching out to the Pharisees and the high priests and the crowd. What is God's will is the only consideration. For this reason, continues Rana, Ignatius acknowledges only one law in his restless search for God: to seek God in all things. And this means to seek God in that spot where at any particular time he wants to be found. It means too to seek God in the world if he wants to show himself in it. And of course he does. In this seeking God in all things, we have the Ignatian formula for a higher synthesis of that division of piety which is customary in the history of religion into a mystical piety of flight from the world and a prophetic one of a divinely commissioned work in the world. And the Ignatian spirituality at the beginning of the modern world beautifully enabled us moderns, if we could call us that, to do both together and be available for either. To be at the heart of the world, and yet, as Teilhard de Chardin says, God is the heart and the beyond of everything. So to be at the heart while in touch with the transcendent mystery. To be mystical and prophetic at the same time, if that is what God asks of us. And so to conclude, Ignatius knows that he can seek the God of Jesus and find him also in the world, if this should please God. And so he is prepared in indifference, that's what we're speaking about, to seek God and God alone, always God alone, but always God everywhere, also in the world. And this phrase, which is typical of Ignatian spirituality, in actione contemplativus, to be contemplative in activity. In the middle of our daily life, to have our heart tuned to God. Once we have found the God of the life beyond, then such an attitude will break out of a deep seclusion in God, break out into the world, and work as long as day lasts. Immerse itself in the work of time in the world, and yet await with deep longing the coming of the Lord. So thank you. That's the best I can offer you on this very subtle, but I think really important subject, which is at the heart of our prayer. Next week, please God, my aim is to talk about silence and solitude at the beginning, and then to start on a fairly lengthy journey with you, if you'd like to stay with me, in looking at what's called contemplative prayer. That is, not the prayer that we can do from our initiative responding to grace, but the prayer that God takes us on when we let go the ego and let go control. And I'll share with you what some of the great masters of the spiritual life tell us about that journey. Thank you.